Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Friday, May the 11th, 2018. Hooray! 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. We're all happy because it's the end of the work week. It's the end of the five-day week. It's the thing that the Countess of Grantham has never heard of. Not the Countess. What is she? What is it when you're the elder person? I can't think of what they call that.
Drawing a blank.
I'm not sure what it is, but you have to know the show. But the role played by Maggie Smith, her comment is, "What's a weekend?" See, that's what happens when you have all the money. You don't know what a weekend is, right? The Dowager. That's what they're called. They're called Dowagers. Yes, there it is. The Dowager of Grantham. So yes, we will leave the shores of the UK, come back to the US. And here we are doing our Friday podcast. How are you doing? Anything happening in your life?
Yeah, I'm doing really great. Today just feels good on many fronts just because there's circumstantial things that are going well for me. And, you know, in a way, Abraham talks about, you know, you don't want to rely on circumstances to how you feel. But you know what? When circumstances are just going really well, why not let that be an extra opportunity to just feel good and to announce it and celebrate it? And
sure.
That's where I am right now.
Why not? Yeah.
They're on go.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take every opportunity, I would say, you know.
Yeah. How about you? How are you doing?
Good stuff happening. The book is moving right along. I actually have not received any typo corrections in the last couple of days. I think people are running out of finding them, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
We made a change to Keisha's story, but that's like the biggest change of the last couple of days. So, I mean, there's nothing, there's nothing going on there.
How are you doing as far as getting votes for the cover?
We've got about 28 out of the 40 who have voted. And okay. I actually sent out an email to some of the ones who hadn't voted yet to say, hey, I hadn't heard from you. By the way, have you read your story yet? I mean, there's a number of them. We just haven't even looked at it, you know. I did. One of them was actually your friend, Clarissa. She wrote me back to said, yeah, sorry, I've been so busy, but I'll get to it this weekend. So I said, okay, that's fine.
Okay. But, and I haven't voted yet either because I'm waiting.
No, you haven't.
Extra possible cover to come out. So.
That's right, yeah.
And even though I may be in the minority, that's okay. I still, you know, I'm interested in seeing what the last possible cover option is.
Well, you know, we want to get every option out there that people have expressed interest in. You had a very strong opinion, and I thought that should be honored. So we're going to get that cover out there. We're going to say, by the way, for those of you who've already voted, if you want to change your vote, let me know. We'll change the vote. It's okay. So
cool. We'll
see what happens. Yeah. And, the other thing I started doing today is I started looking into what it takes to actually publish the book, you know, through the online publishing tools. And, oh, my God, have they made it so much easier than it used to be.
Oh, that's good news. I thought as you were leading up in this sentence, you were going to tell me something like, oh, you would not believe what they did, but
no.
Easier.
Oh, it's so much easier. I mean, literally, this is going to be like almost a five-minute operation. It's so easy. I mean, it won't quite be that. But when I first did my own book about 10 years ago, I literally spent days on it because of all I had to do in order to get it just the way they wanted it. Today, it's like, PDF file done. Come on,
that's
crazy.
So
and the best part, the best part is that
any of our listeners that have like a book in them, Amazon has now made it really easy.
Oh, yeah.
To publish a book.
Yeah, if you want to self-publish a book, createspace.com is the place to go. That's an Amazon property, and they make it very, very, very simple to publish your own book. I mean, if you've never done anything like that before, and I have because I worked as a graphic designer and so forth, so I've done various print projects over the years. So if you've never done that, there is a bit of a learning curve. But I have to tell you, I mean, the stuff that they want you to do is so minimal compared to what you used to have to do years ago that it's almost laughable. And I'm very pleased to say that the settings I had chosen for, you know, how much margin to put in and, you know, how to handle the gutter and all that kind of stuff was dead on perfect to their spec. And I looked at the numbers. I said, oh, my God, this is great.
Now, is that because you remembered that from before?
No.
No,
it was just because I was using numbers that I knew would work well with a book. And so I plugged them in, and apparently Amazon agrees.
Nice.
So, yeah, awesome. I love it. I love it when things go easy, you know. I just love it when things go easy.
What? We like easy?
We love
show,
easy.
LOA Today,
absolutely.
We want to talk about easy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
I love it. Yep, that fits in with my little quotables, like, it's all good.
That's right.
You know?
I stole that one. That comes from a movie, The Greatest Game Ever Played, and it's one of my favorite lines from that movie.
Oh, it's all good, or the easy peasy?
Easy peasy lemon squeezy, yeah.
Okay.
Did you ever see that movie?
I didn't.
Oh, it's a cute movie. It's a true story, actually. It's the story of a young man who back in 1913 was the first American and the first amateur to win the U.S. Open. And his name was Francis Ouimet. He was one of the first four people inducted into the United States Golf Association's Hall of Fame when they first created the Hall of Fame in 1970. Because he made a tremendous impact on the game. He was this young kid. He was like 20, 21 years old when he won the U.S. Open. He came out of nowhere. He wasn't even supposed to be in the tournament. They added him at the last minute just because they wanted to have a local amateur in the field. And he lived across the street from the golf course.
Oh, my.
And there is an iconic photo of him that they've actually turned into bronze statues and such of him and his young, I think he was like an 11-year-old caddy, named Eddie. And Eddie was described by one of the visitors, actually a lord from the United Kingdom, who was visiting to watch the U.S. Open along with two of the most famous golfers of the time, one of whom was Harry Vardon, who was like the leading golfer at the time, and in fact was extremely influential on the game. In fact, to this day, the grip that all golfers use is known as the Vardon grip. That's how influential he is. But this guy was over here trying to win the tournament, and in the movie anyway, I don't know if he actually said this in real life, but in the movie, his sponsor, this lord, saw Francis Ouimet's caddy and said, "Who's that carrying his bag? A pygmy?" So the classic shot is the two of them. He was a fairly tall, skinny kid, and this little short kid dragging the bag along. That's the two of them walking down the fairway. And it is a classic shot in the world of golf. So anyway, this is the movie about how he won that tournament, and it's a great movie. Really, really fun.
And from there, you were telling us that's where the quote came from.
That's where the quote came from. That's what little Eddie said after Francis sunk one of his putts. And Eddie, okay, just a moment ago, had given him a little pep talk, saying, "Come on, you can do this," that kind of a thing. And so he sinks the putt, and Eddie goes over, grabs the ball out of the hole, starts wiping, and says, "Easy peasy, lemon squeezy," and just walks right off.
That's nice. Well, and I got my quote, "It's all good," from it was a two-season series called Dark Angel with Jessica Alba, and it was kind of a sci-fi movie about what would happen if, like, they called it the pulse, where there was some kind of an electrical charge in the atmosphere that disrupted all electricity, and so people couldn't use computers. Their Wi-Fis were down. Everything got disrupted. So anyway, that's just what the story is about. But there was one character in there. He was Jamaican, and his response to everything was, "It's all good, man, all the time. It's all good, all the time." And I picked that up. My husband and I used to laugh, and we'd say it to each other. And then as I was coming more into my learnings about law of attraction, I just noticed that "it's all good" just sort of popped out of me.
Yeah, sure.
And I realized I know where it comes from, but it so fits with law of attraction. Because step five, which is where you're actually in contrast again, but you're not beating yourself up for it.
Right.
And you're appreciating really the treasure that comes from contrast. That's where I started to really recognize it's all good all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all good. No matter even when it's bad, it's still all good. So that's where I got mine from.
So you mean that's the phase where you're allowing?
It's the stage in life where everything is allowing. Everything feels good. No matter how good or bad you may have once judged it, it's still all good.
Which is very cool, because that's what we're on in the book. We're up to part four, The Art of Allowing.
Yeah. I mean, before we go there, I do want to share just this observation I had, because I thought it was kind of interesting and definitely worth sharing on a show about law of attraction.
Absolutely.
I had had a scenario with a coworker where there was something that we were all involved in on our team, and I was having a hard time with how it was going down. Mm-hmm. And so I had some negative energy around it, and I was doing my best to work on it. But then I talked to a coworker, and a coworker talked to me about how she had a very similar perspective. And before I knew it, she and I went down the rabbit hole, and we were like, and this, how could they, and how could he do that, and what the hell were they thinking? And I mean, we just, okay, I exaggerated that a little because I really don't go down that extreme anymore. But
it's much more fun that way.
Yeah, but it was definitely enough to say I was not viewing this situation in a way where it was like, oh, it's all good all the time.
This is true.
And so I was doing my part. You know, now I wasn't talking to that coworker for, you know, the rest of the day. And I was kind of internalizing, okay, how do I work through this so that I can come back to my place of feeling good? And how can I look at this in a way that I hadn't currently been looking at it, you know, as in, how's my inner being looking at this? That's what I want to see, because when I see that, it'll bounce me back up to feeling good, and me and my inner being, my pal, will like be on the same page again. But this coworker kept coming into my week, whether it was an email or an IM, they kept coming in and making more comments. And I wasn't completely resolved yet for myself. So every time my coworker said another blah, blah, blah about the situation, it was really easy to reactivate those negative thoughts and feelings. And it was today, and it's been going on maybe a week and a half, but today I just kind of went, I am really tired of not feeling good about this situation. I'm realizing this is dragging on like way too long. And the truth was, it wasn't such a big deal. But yet, it was enough of a big deal that it was causing me to be grumbly whenever I'd think about it. And so today I just kind of did this, hey, I'm drawing a line in the sand. I am going to be serious about this, and I'm going to protect myself. Well, that might not be the right words, but I'm going to like shift out of this, and I'm not going to let the other person steer me down negative avenue. And I'm going to like get more in control of, I want to feel good because I want to feel good. And so I've taken some actions where I did tell another coworker my perspective, and it caused them to feel really good. I was like, and this was a completely different coworker, but I'm like, all right, now that's making me feel good. And so I've just been thinking in the more positive aspects. And Abraham talks about looking at positive aspects, because in any situation, you can have what I would call a pros and cons list, you know, all the crappy things that this means. And then what are all the positive things this means? And truly, the only reason I was moving down the negative spiral is I was really spending more time thinking about the negative stuff than I was the positive. And there are plenty of positive things to look at. So I made a decision today. That's where I want to place my attention, on the positive things that are within this scenario. And let's see where that takes me. Although I expect if I keep staying on it, the old stuff will just shrivel on the vine.
Probably will. Yeah.
So, anyway, I just wanted to share that as an observation because, interestingly, I've been in it for about a week and a half. But it's been like so... Yesterday we were talking about, well, what's a default? This to me was like a default thought.
Oh, yeah.
I was so used to just being dragged down on a work-related thing that it didn't even dawn on me that I was being dragged into something that I didn't like.
Isn't that amazing how that happens? I mean, really, it's just amazing when that happens.
And it wasn't just that the coworker dragged me in. I did have my own negative reaction when this new policy went into place. But then because I talked about it with someone else, it got worse. So the thing that really came to focus today was the power of our story when we share it with somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think had I stayed in a cocoon, which how many of us can really do that? If I could have stayed in a cocoon in my own little space, I was working on my own negative reaction to this new policy. I think I would have come out of it pretty quick, maybe within a day or so or less. But because I talked about it with somebody else, it's like, wow, the power of the like the multiplication factor or the expansion factor. It just grew without me even paying attention. The negativity just grew and grew and grew. And today, when I was thinking about it, when I said, I'm going to draw a line in the sand, Wendy, you're going to start pivoting and putting your attention on what you want and not what you don't want, because you want to feel good again. So that was a deliberate adjustment of my attention.
Hooray!
But I really thought about how that got so out of hand.
Mm.
And I realized it got out of hand because I was talking about it with someone else.
Yeah.
And then someone's else, more than just one.
Well, yeah, that just kind of adds to it, right?
Yeah. And I went, wow, that was really, it was fascinating because one, I've talked about this kind of thing on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I know about this kind of stuff.
Oh, sure.
But until I have a life experience that matches up with the things I've talked about, it doesn't have the same level of awareness and understanding.
Oh, exactly. That's why I was saying that it's amazing when this stuff happens, because here we are, we're studying this stuff regularly. We're talking about it every single day. And then a very relatively simple situation comes up and we trip ourselves on the exact thing we were talking about. I just continue to be amazed at all the different ways. I mean, talk about having limitations built in place and undetected resistances and so forth. When they pop up, you say, where did that come from?
How did I know. I mean, here I am like 10 days later going, how did I miss that? How did I miss that? But I did.
It's incredible. It just shows how much we have to learn in order to really be masters of this. I mean, to just really totally master it. Because there's just, every single day, it's a new thing that comes up. Just amazing.
Wow. And really, I mean, really paying attention to what we think, what we feel. And I did have the feelings all along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like I've had those kinds of feelings many times in my life that I kind of didn't give it a whole lot of credence.
Oh yeah, because they're so familiar, we just kind of like dismiss them, like, oh well, that's nothing new.
Well, and that you just hit on the right word. It's so familiar.
It is, yeah.
That it just doesn't get our attention.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what happened. So today, I was very excited when I got the incredible awareness of, wow, I'm letting myself go in a place I don't really want to go, and I have control over this. So. I know that, especially because the weekend is in front of us, there won't be any coworkers for me to talk to for the next couple of days, so that will help.
It always helps, right?
And I'll probably rethink about this conversation we're having right now, and I'll condition the new response, which is being happy is so much more important to me than grumbling about something I have no control over.
So true. So true. Yeah. Yeah. Very
anyway,
good.
It wasn't, we could call that a win, but to me, I'm calling it an observation. So. In either case, it feels good.
I think it's a win because you recognize it. I mean, that's a huge victory anytime that we have something that, like we were saying, it's so pervasive in our experience that we just kind of dismiss it. We overlook it. We don't even think that it's there. So to recognize it and notice what it is and notice this role that it's playing and say, wait a minute, I don't want that role being played, and then reverse it, that's huge. That's a big win. So congratulations.
Thank you. And now it's time for a drum roll, because we are about to embark on the next section of the book. And I know that brings you great satisfaction.
It does. I love.
Boom, take it away, Walt.
I love going into new sections of the book. But before I do, I just want to take one moment to tell people something I haven't been saying a lot of lately. Most of our listeners are subscribers. However, we also get a lot of new people checking us out. And if you're checking us out during either the live broadcast of this podcast or even in the recording, which is where most people find it, and you have not yet become a subscriber, we urge you to do so. We've found that that when people subscribe, they listen and they listen and they listen. So it really does pay off for them. On average, it's like at least 30 episodes a month per listener, and even in March it was 45 per month, so it was just incredible. But you're definitely doing yourself a favor when you subscribe, and it's so easy to do. You just go to the website, right on the homepage, same place where you listen to the live broadcast if you want to do it on the live schedule. The homepage, of course, is at loatoday.net. The instructions are right there about how to subscribe. And immediately below it, once you've subscribed, is all the social media share buttons. So share the fact that you've subscribed to LOA Today and let your friends know, too. So please subscribe and share.
And you will probably learn about social media tools that you never, or platforms that you never knew.
This is true.
I mean, there's like the main five or six that most people hear about, but oh no, Walt has found every last one on the planet. So go check it out, if nothing else, just to
see,
learn about what other social media platforms are there.
I have to tell you, it's actually a plugin that does it. It's a WordPress plugin that does all those.
Still.
But I tell you,
I'm giving you credit. That
well,
you
thank you. I appreciate
about.
That. Yeah, but when I saw the list, I mean, like you said, I had to look some of them up. I'd never heard of them. Like, what on earth is that?
Yeah, and fortunately, you know, if you hover your mouse, if you're on a desktop, if you hover your mouse over each one, it'll tell
you the
name of
it.
It tells
you what it is. Yeah, that's true.
And I took a couple of them, and I went and Googled them, and I'm like, huh, well, look at that. There's another one. Another one I'd never heard of.
Exactly. Oh, my.
Okay. So before you, just let me know, yes or no, are you ready to get into the book?
I think we are. And the reason I think
okay,
we are...
Okay, so I'm going to do the drum roll again. We've had two false starts into the book. I stopped at once, you stopped at once. So now we're about to go there. So, okay, here we go. Take it away.
Well, this is actually an appropriate part to be on because the topic is the art of allowing. And if there is one thing that we know more than anything else about allowing, it's you want to be in the best possible mood. And right now, we are in the best possible mood.
I don't remember a show where we've been so silly together.
It's got to be a Friday thing. That's all I figure. But so to summarize, we are in the book, The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham. We're up to part four, as Wendy very clearly made clear with her drum roll, The Art of Allowing. And, of course, as with all the other parts, we start off with a definition because we need to know what it is we're talking about. So the subsection is The Art of Allowing Defined. Jerry asks, Abraham, this next subject, I would say, has had the most impact in the way of new understanding for me because I never thought of it from the perspective and with the clarity that you have. And that is the art of allowing. Would you speak about it?
And Abraham says, we are most eager to help you remember your role in the art of allowing because a deliberate understanding and application of this law brings everything together for you. In other words, the law of attraction just is, whether you understand that or not. It's always responding to you and giving you accurate results, which always match what you are thinking about. But a deliberate application of the law of allowing requires you to be consciously aware of the way you feel so that you can choose the direction of your thoughts. Ooh, I'm going to stop right there. That's exactly what I did today.
It is. Perfectly.
Where I purposely decided to turn my attention toward feeling good.
That's right.
Okay, I'll continue.
Yeah.
An understanding of this law is what determines what you create intentionally or by default. We have put the art of allowing in this order. Followed the law of attraction first and the science of deliberate creation second. Because the art of allowing cannot begin to be understood until the first two are. Okay, now they go into a long explanation, so I just want to ask you if you had any comments before we jump into the next part.
No, this is good. I'd say let's go through the heavy part and then we can talk about it.
Okay, why don't I read the italics part and you read the unitalics part? So
So it starts off by saying what we mean by the art of allowing is?
I am that which I am. And I am pleased with it, joyful in it. And you are that which you are. And while it is different, perhaps, from that which I am, it is also good. Because I am to focus upon that which I want, even if there are those differences between us that are dramatic, I do not suffer negative emotion because I am wise enough to not focus upon that which brings me discomfort. I have come to understand, as I am one who is applying the art of allowing, that I have not come forth into this physical world to get everyone to follow the truth that I think is the truth. I have not come forth to encourage conformity or sameness, for I am wise enough to understand that in sameness, in conformity, there is not diversity that stimulates creativity. In focusing upon bringing about conformity, I am pointed toward an ending rather than to a continuing of creation.
And so the art of allowing is absolutely essential to the continuation or the survival of this species, of this planet, of this universe, and that continuation is powerfully allowed from the broader perspective of Source. You, from your physical perspective, may not be allowing your own expansion, and when you do not, you feel rotten. And when you do allow another, you feel rotten. I'm sorry, when you do not allow another, you feel rotten. When you see a situation that bothers you and you decide that you will do nothing to try to stop it or change it, you are tolerating the situation. And that is very different from what we mean by allowing. Allowing is the art of finding a way of looking at things that still allows your connection to your inner being at the same time. It is achieved by selectively sifting through the data of your time-space reality and focusing upon things that feel good. It is about using your emotional guidance system to help you determine the direction of your thoughts. So a lot of stuff in there, and a lot of good stuff too.
Yeah, I was going to say the first idea that comes to mind when you read that allowing is different than tolerating.
Very good point.
It made me think about the word acceptance, because I hear that kind of tossed about quite often, like, oh, well, you know, I accept that. It's fine. And then the next words I hear are, you know, how dare they, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, they're not accepting it. And I think that sometimes we know what we've learned, and in our attempt to either show off that we know stuff, or in our attempting to think that we really do know what we're talking about, we use words sometimes, but we haven't really learned to understand what they mean.
And what do you mean by that? Let's be definitive. You say we don't always know what they mean. Okay. So what do you mean by that? What exactly are you trying to say with that?
So there's three words that they've talked about: tolerating, allowing, and I'm going to throw in accepting.
Okay.
And so if somebody says, oh, no, I'm tolerant, but then you hear a person having a hard time with or judging or being critical of the very thing that they said they're tolerant of, what that to me usually means is they're not going to do anything they're not going to call the police. They're not going to ground their child. You know, they're not going to put in some negative consequence. When they say tolerate, normally to me what that means is they're going to ignore their feelings and not take any action.
They're just going to kind of simmer in the corner like...
Yeah, I mean, how would you define tolerate the same or different than what I just said?
Well, I have to admit, I never really thought about it in those terms. For me, actually, tolerate is more of a politically correct term than anything else, to be perfectly honest. It's a term that generally means, well, you know, I want to be tolerant of your views, and you can be tolerant of my views, and we'll get along. And it's sort of like we say that because it's a way of just kind of making peace. But what does it actually mean? I'm not really sure if I can give you a clear definition of what tolerate means. But I lean in the direction that you're talking about. I think there usually is some sort of an undercurrent emotion that isn't totally positive behind it and could be quite negative. So I think you're onto something there, but I don't really have a clear definition.
So in the case you just brought up, which I love that example, because we hear that quite often, you know, like, well, I tolerate their political view,
right?
You know, so we can agree to disagree. But to me, sometimes that's where I'll hear, well, I accept that they believe that, you know, which is more like, I'm aware that they believe that, but I don't like it.
That's right.
You can really tell. Now we're going to move into the allowing. You can really tell when you're in a space of allowing, because there's no negative charge. There's no undercurrent when you hear someone speak and you know that they're saying the right words, but you get a physical feeling sensation of, how come I'm not believing what they're saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of instances like that in life. There are a whole bunch of them.
And I remember the first time I was really personally reconciling with the word tolerating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember the circumstances, but I do remember the feelings. I started to allow myself to own the fact that when I was saying I was tolerating a circumstance or a person or a situation, I was really angry. I just wasn't going to do something about it because somehow I felt it wasn't appropriate or it wasn't my place, or I thought it would make someone, you know, like go off the handle and it would become a bad explosive situation. But I realized tolerating doesn't feel good.
No. No, it doesn't.
So because tolerating doesn't feel good, that's a place where I go, so inner being, what do you think about this? And that's what, I mean, years ago, I used the word accepting because I didn't know about this word allowing. I wasn't an Abraham student yet. But I moved to acceptance. And for me, true acceptance, not the kind that people may give lip service to, but true acceptance is where there's no negative charge.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you feel really okay about it. Like I'll give a perfect example. So the book covers, I know you'll know this about me. I've had some very strong opinions about how I would like to see us choose this book cover over that book cover.
Right. Yeah.
But I really honestly, as much as I appreciate you bending over backwards to accommodate my choices and the things that are important to me, I also know that if the vote of all the authors goes in a different direction, I'm not going to pout over it. Now, I will tell you, in the beginning, I think I was.
I think really?
I can't believe all these people don't like the one I want. What's wrong with them?
None of us have ever been in that place before. Oh, no.
I know. And I really had to look at it, and I'd say, okay, Wendy, really, how important is the book cover in the grand scheme of the world, life, etc.? And I went, well, none of the covers are bad. And I went, well, actually, Walt already told me that most people are heading toward kind of like my second choice. And so I went, okay. But then we had two different book title options. And I think people are leaning toward the one that I would rather have as the byline versus the title. And still, I asked myself, does it really matter in the long, in the big, long picture? Does it really matter? And I said, no. And I knew in myself, it's like I could let go of that fight. Cause yeah, I had a fight in me. I could but that to me is like left over from where the only way I could ever feel heard and important in life is like took my point of view.
Right.
But I'm like, that's not who I am anymore. So it's like, I can let go. And you know what? If you put a black cover on it with a black background and there was no words, you know, so be it.
I think we'll try to avoid that cover option, but yes.
I know you won't, but it's like, if it was like as boring as could be, just black and you put white font title, whatever, I would go, well, people will recognize it as that's different and they might buy it because they go, who the hell would have put a book cover together like that?
Well, I could put together just a white cover with one piece of type sideways, like it was rubber stamped on, and the title says, boring title. How does that work for you?
There you go. But what I came to understand for me is, I really do have acceptance for whichever cover actually ends up, you know, becoming the ultimate cover. And I'm not just tolerating it. So here's a good example. Back in the beginning when we started putting out the book covers and I had such a strong attachment to which one I thought I wanted it to be, I was internalizing it and fighting for what I wanted. And so, of course, that's resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, okay, but Wendy, you got to be a professional. Come on. First of all, people listen to you on the air. You're a co-host. And even if all the other authors may not know me, it's like, if they meet me, I don't want anyone to ever think that I was being a sore loser. So I was thinking, well, what do I do? And I thought, well, I'm just going to keep my opinion to myself and I'll just grumble in a corner and I'll pout.
Which matches now, something, by the way. I just want to interrupt for 1 second because you asked me earlier what my definition of tolerant would be or tolerate. It would be putting up with. And that's what that is. That's putting up with.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I would call that perspective tolerating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And it felt bad.
Yeah.
And because it felt bad, that's what actually clued me into, I think I want a different perspective. So I started thinking through some options. And that's when I went to, okay, in the long story or the big picture, doesn't really matter. All of them are nice. And I went, oh yeah, okay, I'm letting go of this fight because it's just not, it's not worth it to me to disrupt my feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
I like
Absolutely.
Feeling good too much.
Yeah.
And so now I'm in a place of acceptance. We could also call it, you know, allowing. I'm in a state of allowing. Whatever book cover you choose, it's okay. Whatever book cover gets the most votes, it's okay. Because I want to be in allowance because it feels good. So they're my three words. Tolerance.
And it does feel good, too. It feels really good. Because when you're in that allowing place, first of all, you're not putting up anymore. Oh, I just got to put up with it. You just kind of simmer here in the corner. Like, I love you're sitting in the corner simmering. I love that. That was a good analogy. So that's where you go when you're putting up with, oh, I'll just put up with it. Yeah. Not exactly a high vibration place.
Well, and so let's just ask the question, how many of us have put up with just putting up with?
Yeah, oh. How many of us put up with just putting up with over the course of a lifetime, carrying it on for decades at a time, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, that was my hand you saw up in the air, by the way.
And when you want to be a deliberate creator and feel good, at some point, you know, you may consider, you know what, I don't like how this feels. Tolerating doesn't feel good. Just putting up with something doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't. It's nice to be able to let go of that, too, because when you do let go of it, it's a relief. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big relief. It's like, oh, good. I don't have to do that anymore. I can just feel good for a change. How nice.
You know what? And what just came to me now was part of my part of the silliness that we started with at the beginning of the show
mm-hmm.
was because of what I had said earlier, where I drew a line in the sand that I was no longer going to put up with me grumbling over something.
Right, right.
And I was to turn my attention toward what I desired, which is feeling good. And holy cow, that came pretty quick. And it came like, not just subtly,
no.
But when I drew a line of sand, it was like it springboarded me into feeling good. Because I'll tell you, for the last couple hours before the show, I was like, I feel happy for no reason at all.
Nice.
<feeling good.
laughs> I like that the best. I like it the best. I mean, the first few times that happened where I was just feeling good and I couldn't attribute it to any one particular thing. I was just feeling good. It just felt weird. But after having been through it a few times, that is actually the best place to be because it's the one where I'm most guaranteed not to be carrying along some sort of resistance that I didn't know about. And that's a good thing. I really like that a lot. So I like not knowing what it is that's making me feel so good. It sounds strange to say that, but I do.
That's cool. Cool. So do we want to jump back in?
Yeah.
To the next subject?
Yeah. The next subject is, shouldn't I protect myself from others' thoughts? And that's an interesting topic. Jerry asks, the question that was difficult for me in the beginning of this was, how do we protect ourselves from others who are thinking differently from us, differently enough that they might invade our space, so to speak, in some way?
Okay. And before I go on to what Abraham says, I wonder what you think about this. But as I read with you what Jerry was asking, I went, that kind of feels like a default thought.
Oh, yeah.
Because where would someone get the idea that you have to protect yourself from other people's thinking?
Well, there are a number of ways to express it. I agree it's totally a default thought, but I can see where it's also the beginning of an exploration of, you know, where am I at with this whole law of attraction thing, and how am I going to become a deliberate creator, and how am I going to shift my thoughts over? Because if we feel like our thoughts, I mean, I saw a post about this on Facebook just before we came on the show here. If we feel like others are such a big influence on us that they bring us down, I mean, this one guy was posting, he likes to have lunch alone. He doesn't like to eat with others because there's such a drain on him. You know what I mean? I'm reading this, I'm thinking, wow, first of all, you got some boundary issues, guy. And second of all, that's something to work on because you definitely don't want to be just giving your energy away. So, okay, then how do we start addressing that? I think that's what Jerry's question starts to do. It addresses it.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate your perspective because you did bring in some other thoughts that I had not considered.
Okay.
So Abraham says, good. That is why we said that before you can understand and accept the art of allowing, you must first understand the law of attraction and the science of deliberate creation. For certainly, if you do not understand how something is coming into you or how it's coming unto you, then you are fearful of it. If you do not understand that others cannot come into your experience unless you invite them through your thought, then of course you would not worry about what others are doing. But when you understand that nothing will come into your experience unless you invite it through your thought, with emotional thought and great expectation, then unless you actually accomplish this delicate creative balance, you will not receive it. When you understand these powerful universal laws, you no longer feel a need for walls, barricades, armies, wars, or jails, for you understand that you are free to create your world as you want it to be, while others are creating their world as they choose it to be, and their choices don't threaten you. You cannot enjoy your absolute freedom without this knowledge. Holy cow. I know there's another paragraph, but I just got to go, wow, that's cool. We'll come back and address that.
Okay.
In this physical world, there are those things that you are in absolute harmony with, and there are those things that you are in absolute disharmony with. And there is some of everything in between. But you do not come forth to destroy or contain that which you do not agree with, for this is a continually changing thing. Instead, you have come forth to identify moment by moment, segment by segment, day by day, and year by year, what it is you want, and to use the power of your thought to focus upon it and to allow the power of the law of attraction to draw it unto you.
Once again, a lot of stuff in that, a whole lot of stuff. And I'm realizing, too, why there's so much stuff, or why there seems to be so much stuff. So much of what they try to address has to do with what's going on in the minds of many of their listeners. And what's going on in the minds of many of their listeners is invariably expressed in the negative. So they're expressing it in the negative. And so we're reading sentence after sentence. We do not this, do not this, don't want this, don't want that. And so we're constantly doing all these little shifts in our mind trying to figure out, okay, so what is it that they don't want? What is it that we're trying to avoid? You know, it's not a nice, easy flow like it is when we say, I want this, I want that, I want that. That's, I think, one of the reasons it's so dense. And so they bring up a lot of stuff. Especially with the analogies about understanding the universal laws, you no longer feel a need for walls, barricades, armies, wars, jails. Like, whoa, that's pretty big.
But I'm going to read this backwards, because okay. The last sentence says you cannot enjoy your absolute freedom without this knowledge. Okay, and what is that knowledge? That's why I'm going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding exactly what you said, these powerful laws, that you no longer need to feel walls, barricades, armies, wars, or jails, for you understand that you are free to create your world as you want it to be, while others are creating their world as they choose it to be, and their choices don't threaten you.
Yeah, this is actually a description. This is like a really advanced description. This is almost like a look ahead to where more and more people are going to, rather than a picture of where most people are right now. But it really, it lights a path that says this whole life experience is and could become really, really great, to the point where all the fears that have been driving us all these decades and generations and centuries and millennia are starting to fade away. I mean, if what they're saying is true, that's where it's all headed to. And I think that what they're saying is true.
Well, I think the biggest component that I'm hearing is that every one of us has our own choice, not only of what we choose to be and have and do in our life, but we also have the choice not to be threatened by other people on this planet who are doing things in contradiction to that which is important to us.
Absolutely. I could even add in the fact that I, for the most part, do a news blackout. I don't pay attention to almost any of the news. But I do have one little thing that I follow, and that's the whole saga of President Trump and the Russia investigation and so forth, just because it's like watching a soap opera. And it's interesting to watch that from the perspective of the much higher vibrational place that I am now compared to where I was, say, you know, even 3 years ago or 5 years ago. Because now it's not, we're long past the tolerant. We were talking about tolerating before. We're long past tolerating in terms of my experience of it. We're now up to just kind of sitting back in total disbelief, like, wow, is that really what goes on in the real world? I feel a big distance from it that I didn't used to feel. And it's kind of like just watching from the peanut gallery and just laughing like, that. Here come the clowns, send in the clowns.
So, you know, when President Obama was in office and, you know, his program of Obamacare came mm-hmm. into being.
Right. Yep.
Of course, there were many people on the other side who were like screaming and yelling, oh, yeah. saying this is the worst thing, you know, ever.
Yep.
And then there were others saying, oh, this is wonderful. It's going to make such a positive difference.
Right.
And from my perspective, even though at the time it didn't really affect me because I have a, you know, W-2 income and I get health care from my, you know, the company I work for, mm-hmm. it really didn't affect me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was aware that my friends that were self-employed, it affected them greatly.
Yeah, sure.
Because some of them who did not have insurance previously, because they very holistic, they don't feel they require insurance in their life, they're very healthy, now were required to spend a very large amount of money to do this thing to comply with Obamacare.
Right, yeah.
Now, I looked at it, and of course, I was, you know, I wished my friends didn't have to spend this money on something they didn't feel was necessary. But at the same time, I looked at the whole thing, and I didn't just tolerate it. I was allowing it. I'm like, okay, it is what it is. And I don't have any negative charge. And as I've considered going self-employed again, I just considered, okay, I guess I'll have to spend money on insurance to be compliant. And I'm like, well, once upon a time, I would have been really angry about that. But I thought, you know what? I'll just find the money for it. And I'll just expect that, you know, the universe knows that if I'm going to become self-employed, and this is a United States law that requires me to do it, okay, fine, it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, we have President Trump in position, and he's kind of wanting to undo some of that. And what? And I don't know what the good, the bad, or the ugly is, but I purposely stay outside of it. And this is not because this is my political perspective, but I purposely stay outside of it because not knowing actually allows me to stay more in a state of allowing than if I got into the details and felt I'd have to take a side.
Well, exactly. That's what you don't want to do. And that's why I do the except for that one thing, I do with the news blackout. I just don't even want to know what's going on with the rest of it. Although I am reminded periodically by Abraham that if you have something going on and you feel like your best move is to evacuate the space so that you're no longer there, you still have to remember that you're bringing yourself along with you. So until you address whatever was the root cause within yourself about your reaction to X, whatever the X is, that root cause hasn't gone away yet. You still have to deal with that. Otherwise, the next time you run into a similar situation, it's going to just, you know, pop right up again. And that's a good right. point. That's one I try to keep in mind. But in general, I agree. It's the news is basically a lose-lose situation. There's very, very little in it that's worth paying any attention to. In fact, there are times when I think of myself as being like a little bit mentally ill because I'm enjoying watching the whole Russia thing because of the same reason that people like to watch train wrecks and going to the car races to watch a car wreck and so forth, because that's kind of like what we're watching with it. So I guess I'm a flawed human being because I like laughing at the absurdity of the whole thing. But on the other hand, I also notice that it's my way of putting it back into perspective and just not taking it seriously anymore. And I figure if I can do it with that, maybe I'll get to the point where I can do that with other stuff on the news so that even if I see stuff on the news, I just won't even care anymore. It just won't even touch me because I just don't buy into it.
Got it. And, you know, I was watching, I think it was at the end of us. Oprah has this interesting thing. She does an interview for about 50 minutes, and then she has a little thing. I think it's, she calls it a super soul short. It's
okay.
Like this short little 10-minute thing that kind of fills the rest of the 1 hour space that her television show runs.
Okay.
And it was this gal who apparently when she went through the public school system, it just didn't really connect for her.
Mm.
And so she got kicked out of like 8 schools.
Whoa.
And, you know, grades were not her thing.
Yeah.
But she had such a strong desire to do certain things that really would kind of change the way schools were done.
Mm-hmm.
That as an adult, she created a learning program. And I honestly don't know if it replaces regular school or if it's an extracurricular. But it's just very creative. And it gives her what she's today looking for. And I think about, okay, so in this terminology, was she tolerant? Was she defiant? What was she, you know, going through school years? And it's like, I will say one thing. It was definite contrast. She
very
was not
much.
Having a good time.
Yeah.
And by anybody else's standards, being kicked out of 8 schools, you'd go, not a good student, troubled child, et cetera, et cetera. But she turned the contrast, she turned the uncomfortable situation into something remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on this Oprah program, they showed her doing her thing and having all these kids around her that she was giving positive influence out, where they were like cutting up magazines and they were going to draw, or they were going to create a picture of themselves. It didn't have to literally be of themselves, but it represented them, you know, and she was working on their identity. And that's not something that you do in public school. But it's like, wow, this is really cool. But I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is that on some level, she had to become she had to get into a state of allowing to bring about what she actually ended up bringing about.
Mm-hmm.
Because if she had been defiant and like, well, I'm going to show them, I'm going to do something better than, you know, what all those other crazy people tried to make me go through, I don't believe she would have gotten the incredible result. But when they were interviewing her, she just kept saying, I just kept feeling that I could do something different. I kept knowing that I could create something that would be better, that would reach out, that would reach a child's imagination and their heart in a way that would really make a difference for them. And so I almost wonder if on some level she was allowing what she didn't like to just be, knowing that one day she could create what she really wanted.
I think that's probably true. In fact, you were asking what words you would put to it, and I'm not sure what words you come up with, but when you said that, the two words that came to my mind, one was from her years of experience in school or getting kicked out of school, and then her later experience as an adult, survive and thrive. She turned her survival experience into a thriving experience. And in that sense, she basically used her very difficult experience as a springboard to leap into this huge new thing that she's now since created. And in the process, she basically made it relatively easy by comparison to allow. It wasn't, there was no longer a tolerant thing going on. She was just going her own route. And that going that own route gave her the feeling of freedom that she needed to allow. And boy, did it work, apparently, because look what she's doing. Look what's happening in her life.
Yeah. And you know, when we talked a couple weeks ago about the 5 steps that Abraham is to describe being a deliberate creator, I see it as a very circular process.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, step one, in most cases, it's defined as, you know, you have some kind of contrasting experience. So in this girl's life, you would say she's been kicked out of 8 schools. That's a lot of contrast.
Oh, yeah.
But every time she was in a place that didn't feel good, whether she was consciously aware or not, her preference was being logged in to the book of inner being. Like her inner being.
The book of inner being.
Yeah. Her inner being grabbed a hold of this circumstance, produced the result of, oh, I have clarity of what I really want. Now, what's interesting is that the inner being gets incredible clarity immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes it takes a little bit longer for the part of us that is human to figure it out.
This is
but
true.
Step two is our inner being's like, got it. We know what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
Step three is coming into a space of allowing. where we can receive it, but you can't receive something that you're in resistance to. And so somehow this young gal got herself into a space of being okay with how she was treated, okay with the fact I've been kicked out 8 times, but I'm going to do something new and different that will make me feel good.
Exactly.
So that's step 3. And then, you know, step 4 is where she gets really, really good at recognizing, if I stay open, I'm going to create something magnificent. Because step 4, if you recall, is getting really good at step 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, no matter what adversity comes along, you just stay the course.
And you're building up the energy.
I know it's all going to work out for me. It's mm-hmm. all good.
Yeah.
You know? And then step 5 is, I'm sure she had some troubles, if you will, because I don't know anything that doesn't have any troubles as you're trying to launch a new school or a new program or whatever. But the real step 5 is, okay, so now I'm back into something I don't like. But real allowing is going, I accept that this is just part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's allowing me to get even greater clarity. And so whatever I'm going to create, I might have thought I knew what I wanted to do, but now I'm actually getting greater clarity because this speed bump that I ran into, you know, caused me to have to ask new questions and actually invent or create something new to go forward. So, you know, the art of allowing is so vital to us receiving, because once upon a time, Abraham used to call step 3 the step of allowing, or the art of allowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now they talk about it more from a perspective of receiving.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you receive? You open your heart to allow, and you let loose of the resistances that may have been there before that, you know, caused you to just put up with the stuff you didn't like.
And an interesting thing, too, in the story that you told as you were going through those steps, when you got to the third step, the allowing step, you talked about what she had done to build this new approach, build this new school, so to speak, this new way of educating. And what struck my attention about it was a set of actions. It wasn't just a thought process. At that point, she was taking action. I guess you could say it was an inspired action. And mm-hmm. the action played a very integral role in allowing. Not necessarily the way we normally think about it, but it played a big role in her life. The allowing and the action went hand in hand.
And it was smooth. You know, and to listen to her and to watch her on camera, it's like I just saw such a level of peacefulness in this young gal.
That's nice.
Looks like she's probably in her mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
But just a level of peacefulness.
Mm.
Like, she had made peace with all that went down that got her to where she is.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like a beautiful expression of allowing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really good. Really, really good. I guess then the answer to the question for that particular subsection is, the question of the subsection was, shouldn't I protect myself from others' thoughts? Her answer was, just go build something new.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I've ever really thought about trying to protect myself from someone else's thoughts in the way that Jerry put it. But overall, you know, the phrase that I've told you has been very consistent in my world. It's none of my business. And I do my best to stay out of other people's business and stay in my lane.
Mm.
So if I start being concerned about what other people are thinking, I'm not in my own lane.
It's a good point. That's a very good point. That's a point I think that we tend to overlook.
Yeah. And it feels good to just stay in my lane. Trust me, I got enough on my plate. I really don't need to go into somebody else's world and try to figure out how they should orchestrate, you know, their life. Because I used to say, when I'm busy taking care of somebody else, who's taking care of me?
And unfortunately, we're long past time, so we're going to have to leave it there. But it's been great, and we'll talk again on Monday. How about that?
Yes, this has been a fun and fabulous Laughing Friday.
Absolutely. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.